Welcome to the podcast of the Geological Society. My name's Sarah Day and I'm with Professor Richard Davies from Durham University, who is a petroleum geologist and Professor of Energy. I think last time I saw you, we were talking about the Lucy mud volcano, which is several years back now. And that was another case where you were thinking about industry, the energy industry, and how it affects the environment. Is that something you're particularly specialist in?
Well, you know, getting to the age of 46, you publish papers as an academic, and after a while you sort of think, you know, who's reading them? Who is this important? Is this significant? And of course I publish papers that not many people read, and I also want to do things that have that are important, that help inform. And on the Lucy Mud Volcano, which was a long time ago now, it's about 2006 it started, you know, there wasn't much information, not much science coming out, and there was a need to fill that gap. And the same thing's happened with shale gas, if you think about it, around Europe. There's these questions that people are coming up with and they want answers, and I think it's actually part of the responsibility of academics to get involved and to keep researching these questions and give independent, agnostic views of what the science is telling us. For the Lucy Mud Volcano, we were finding out why this absolutely unique, remarkable thing had happened, which had caused 40,000 people to lose their homes. And with fracking, what we're doing is, you know, are people meant to be worried about earthquakes, or are they should be worried about contamination of water? And so we're researching those in an agnostic, neutral way, totally unbiased, and you know, just ploughing through the questions and publishing papers and getting the information out there.
And with shale gas, you're part of REFINE, which is an organisation that's looking into the science behind this.
Yeah, so REFINE stands for Researching Fracking in Europe. And it was launched at the Geological Society back in November of 2013. But the concept for that came a year or two before that. I was travelling around Europe, talking to people, you know, the local mayor in Ukraine through to politicians in Brussels. And they were coming up with questions. And I kept thinking, well, wait a minute, I don't know the answer to the question, which I hate. You know, you always think, oh, there's a gap. So I kept writing the questions down, asking people, do you know any more about this than I do? Realised there was a gap. And that there were questions that we didn't know the answers to as academics, and the industry didn't seem to be able to answer. Well, that gap needs to be filled with the best science we can do at this point in time, and that's what REFINE is doing, totally independently. Now, as you know, we have funding from industry and from Natural Environment Research Council, and so it's critically important that we have strong ethics that separate the research from the research that we do from the funding that we get, and we're doing it. We're doing it very successfully. So that's a critical element to the project, is to do that independently. It's great to have the GeolSOC support in taking the project forwards.
And when it comes to geology and the media, I guess shale gas and fracking is probably one of the biggest, most talked about subjects.
I mean, energy has become a very common word in the newspapers and on the radio, and it's something that people are interested in because people are having to pay more for their energy on their own energy bills. So I guess, you know, there's a whole series of things that have happened over the last few years. There was obviously an earthquake in Lancashire in 2011 that raised the profile. Josh Fox made a programme called Gaslands that raised the profile again. But I've never done a study on why it's got the prominence it has, but it seems to me a number of things that have happened that have contributed to this topic having a high profile in the UK at the moment, and not just in the UK, in other parts of the world.
And you mentioned Gaslands, which is the film quite a lot of people will have seen, which might have informed their views on fracking, and the famous scene with the tap exploding. And you talked about that in your lecture as well, and where these misconceptions can sometimes come from seeing dramatic images like that or diagrams. Is that something you come up against quite a lot?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me a question about a controversial technology like GM crops, I don't know the science that's behind that. And I'm a scientist, reasonably well informed. So I only know what I see in the press and what I've heard about. And the same for shale gas. We only know what we sort of heard about or read in the papers, so or seen the imagery. So our role at REFINE is to carry out independent research and make sure that, you know, we've managed to unravel what we do know, what we don't know. And as a scientist, I mean, we're intrigued by things that we know we don't know. Known unknowns.
So in terms of the things we do know about, some of the things you talked about were the issue of water contamination, earthquakes, other risks that people are nervous about with fracking. Perhaps can you say something about what your research has found about some of those risks?
Well, on water contamination, I mean, people will have seen the image of someone igniting gas coming out of a tap, you know, a normal water tap. And this is pretty evocative stuff. You know, can fracking cause water contamination is the question. Well, people were lighting gas coming out of taps in the 1970s and 80s before fracking started. And the gas can have an absolutely natural origin due to the breakdown of organic matter in water supplies, and that's called biogenic gas. And our research has actually shown that the fractures due to fracking are just not tall enough to get from 3 kilometres depth right up towards the aquifer. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but it's a very unlikely scenario. So fracking itself is an unlikely cause of water contamination. Of course, spilling chemicals and not sealing wells properly could cause water contamination, but not the cracking process that takes place underground.
And the other issue that people talk about a lot is induced seismicity and earthquakes that can be caused by fracking. And you mentioned some statistics about that as well.
That's right. Well, we looked at earthquakes that have been generated by our activity, man's activity, since 1929. We found 198 examples, published examples, caused by mining, caused by conventional oil and gas field production, causes reasonable size earthquakes.
And this is globally, these numbers?
Yeah, these are events that occurred in various parts of the world and have been documented. So we've looked at induced seismicity, you know, man-made earthquakes, if you like, or ones that have been caused by our activity, and found that fracking itself really isn't particularly important compared to geothermal energy, compared to mining, compared to filling dams with water, creates bigger earthquakes than fracking has. So fracking can cause felt earthquakes. It's not something that people should be complacent about, but you've got to put it in context. It doesn't produce particularly big ones. You need to make sure that the well avoids drilling into a fault, which is going to move at some stage in the near future, and then you've sort of triggered it by pumping fluid into that fault.
So those are probably the two main safety issues that people think of when they think of fracking. It seems like both of those are fairly small risks. Are there any factors which are bigger risks?
Well, when you say factors that are bigger risks, I mean, there's a couple of things to consider. I mean, there's firstly the chance of something happening, and then secondly, what's the impact if something did happen? And in considering risk, we should also think about the impact as well. The research we've just published a couple of weeks ago was on well leakage, whether a leakage could occur within a well or in some small percentages of occurrences, could fluids get out of the well into the soil or into the aquifer or into the atmosphere? Now, that obviously is an impact, and so we've researched that quite thoroughly. And a small percentage of wells do show evidence for an internal or external leak. And there are some good databases out there. In Pennsylvania, for example, we've found that around 6% of wells drilled in the last 8 years have some sort of internal or external leak. Most of them are internal leaks and don't affect the environment, but some small percentage do affect the environment. So that's our most recent research. It shows that, you know, it's actually quite a mundane thing. Drilling the well is the bit that people need to focus on and making sure it's sealed properly. That's more of a risk probably than whether fracking can cause contamination of water, which we think is a very unlikely scenario.
So is there anything we can do if fracking does go ahead in the UK? Is there anything we can do to minimise that risk of leakage?
Well, that's an extremely good... I mean, there's good regulations in the UK for drilling wells and then plugging them with cement and abandoning them. But all the regulation in the world can't stop the fact that some cements crack and some steels corrode. And so it's imperative that there's good monitoring of wells in the UK. And I think, my colleagues agree with me, you know, that information should go out into the public domain so that if there's a few hundred active wells in the UK that have been producing oil and gas, you know, what do we know about whether they've had any problems with them? And then for abandoned wells, it would be useful to know whether any of those have leaked, even if it's to show that it's a small problem or it's a small contribution to a greenhouse gas emission. But as a scientist, of course, you want more data all the time.
And I guess in terms more generally of the energy mix that we're working towards or that we have now, where do you see shale gas sort of fitting in?
We've not researched that, actually. We've not got an informed opinion of how it could fit in. I mean, Western economies generally have an energy mix. So nuclear provides energy, electricity for us every day of the week, every day of the year, and it's a constant. Now, renewables goes up and down. Wind and solar energy goes up and down because of the weather conditions. Now, gas could mix quite well with those renewable energies, but Whether the UK decides that it wants to try and get some onshore shale gas production is not something we're going to tell anyone to do or not to do. That's completely outside our remit. Our remit is to carry out research, do it independently, and let other people make those decisions.
And it seems like your focus is very much on open data and being very open about the research that you're doing. Is that something that you would think is the way to allay some of these public concerns, is just being more open?
Well, I'm, you know, sorry to dodge the question, I'm not a social scientist, so I don't know whether more information makes you more comfortable or less comfortable on a particular theme. As a scientist, you know, people are asking us questions and sometimes we can't fully answer them because we haven't got enough data. And some of the debates we have as scientists is because, not because we have fundamentally different ideas, it may be that we've just got different data sets or not enough data and there's too much uncertainty. So to have more confidence, we need more data. Whether that makes people more confident or less confident, I don't know, because I've not done the social science research to validate that hypothesis.
And lastly, I wondered if you could contribute to our 100 Geosites project, which people have been following along to on Twitter. We're asking people to nominate their favourite geological sites in the UK.
Kimmeridge Bay in Dorset. And I remember walking along Kimmeridge Bay probably as a 22-year-old doing my undergraduate degree. It was a warm summer and walking along that wave cut platform, and there's the little thrusts that you get in these dolomites, and there was this shale, this big shale, and there's a nodding donkey there. So it all sort of fitted into place. I sort of worked out how all the rocks worked and how hydrocarbons were produced and where they're found. But mainly because I just have very fond memories of undergraduate field trips, just walking along the coastline and thinking, I feel like I've come to the end of my degree and I understand a lot more about geology and I can sort of hold my head up high. And it was along the coast of Kimmeridge Bay that I sort of thought, yeah, I think I've come of age as a geologist.
It's lovely how many of our nominations so far have come from field trips, actually, undergraduate field trips. It's nice that...
Well, I think, you know, anyone who's done a mapping project as an undergraduate will often say, you know, the memories, you never forget those experiences. And often you do feel you're coming of age and doing something useful. You now understand why you did crystallography and paleontology and sedimentology. It all sort of fits together for the first time and you feel you've come of age. So perhaps that's why they say that.
Yeah, and it's led to some important research for you. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks very much.